All right, you guys. First and foremost, welcome to a new episode of Just So We're Clear, a tiny little podcast brought to you out of Singapore by myself, Hanley Hofer, and my co-host, Marissa True.
Hello, hello.
Oh my God. I'm gonna keep doing it. All these hellos, every single episode this season's gonna be weirder and weirder.
I like it, girl. I support it. Let your flag fly.
My freak flag? Got it.
So as you guys can see from the title of this episode, we have a very special guest on speaking about a cause which is simply put, good.
Oh, well put.
Thank you. Thank you. We're talking about a new charity based here in Singapore, founded or co-founded by our guest today, Nadia Hutagalung.
Yeah. So a little bit about Nadia. First of all, just being in her presence I felt like my pores opened and like everything was detoxed. She's just such a, I think you said it before, ethereal.
Yeah, she's so regal as well. She's elegant, she's down to earth. And also for me, I'm not sure if you guys know this, but Nadia started her career being a VJ for MTV. And as some of you know, so did I. So to be in the room with a woman, which honestly I genuinely look up to in terms of what she became because of how she started in a similar way to me was a total fangirl moment. Yeah. Nadia, if you're hearing this, which I'm sure you are, like, I love you.
So Nadia, yeah, like Hanley said, Nadia made her name as an MTV VJ in the 90s. She was also host of Asia's Next Top Model, if you caught one of their later seasons. She's considered one of the most influential people in Singapore. And when we talk about the good that she's doing, it goes well beyond the media. So she's a UN Environment Program Goodwill Ambassador. She's an eco-advocate. She's just an all-round humanitarian.
Yeah, and like we said, being around her expanded our, I guess, vision, image of everything that we would like to be and what we look up to. And having her on this episode was special because we sat down with her to talk about the importance of doing good and also her latest venture out here in Singapore, her latest charity called We the Good.
Yeah, so we're going to be covering all of that in this upcoming episode. And yeah, we're just going to touch on the importance of philanthropy. We're also going to reveal how exactly we got her on the podcast because, I mean, it took some digging on my part. But she was, I think if you guys have tuned into the last season where I said I was just hitting up people, she was one of the people on my list.
We manifested her.
Yes.
Yes. But also, I think it's also it's important to note that 2020 has been a
shit show,
a year. And with all that's going on, one of the things that we may have forgotten to do while focusing on our own well-being, which, by the way, is totally okay, is reaching out, being charitable and helping others. So this is a topic that we should never forget about. And this is a great way to round it up and be reminded on the importance of being good. So on that note, let's open up this episode and introducing to you our little sit-down chat with Nadia Hutagalung. So guys, for this episode, we're coming to you from the rooftop garden of Nomadic, a new luxury co-living space right here in Singapore. So a little bit about Nomadic. They're all about offering hospitality, community, and sustainability to its residents by giving them beautifully designed places to call home in some of the best neighborhoods in town. Also, they're actively working to save the world's rainforests and oceans by donating to the Rainforest Trust every time they get a new member. Even more reason to love them. So if you guys want more details, we'll save it for the show notes down below. So check it out. All right. Well, first of all, I think we just need to address how thankful we are to have you on the show. Marissa and I have a funny story of having you here today because we are secretly just fangirling out deep down inside.
So the backstory behind this is I had a streak during Circuit Breaker where I thought, I really want this podcast to take off. So I'm going to create a list of aspirational people I wanted to interview. And you were one of them. And so I was throwing out DMs in all sorts of different ways and just hoping that something would come through. And lo and behold, you guys got back to us. And I mean, we had a moment where we squealed for about a minute.
Yeah, we're like, what?
is Nadia really going to be on the show? So thank you so much for taking some time to come do this with us.
Thank you. No, thank you. Thank you for thinking of me and with the good. Yeah. Thank you. Aw, so sweet, you too.
So, I mean, how has 2020 been for you?
2020 has been, it's been providing so many opportunities for growth and overcoming internal challenges brought about by the stories that that I sort of tell myself about who I am and what I do and what's important, and then having to work through that. And I think COVID has presented a wonderful opportunity then to find purpose and perspective, because I've spent so much of my time all my life since 1996 traveling the world and speaking about conservation, sustainability, and things like this, right? And so when I kind of got locked in like everyone else did, then I was like, who am I? What am I doing? You know, then where do I find my purpose and how am I going to serve, right? And how do I pivot and adapt the skill sets that I have and the passion that I have for creating impact into where we are now as a community, as a society, it's a global community, right? So in that sense, 2020 has been, for me personally, very fulfilling, just because I'm learning to very quickly do new things, and that's something that I always love to do, is to be able to sort of push myself, stretch myself. I feel like if I'm not being pushed, then I'm not really growing, you know. So in that sense, it's been really interesting. It's been interesting to know that I can thrive at home, as opposed to needing to run, and with We the Good. It's given me so much purpose every morning to sort of get up and really sort of do whatever I can within my limited capacity to try and help.
So before we dig in a little deeper, can you give us just a rough outline of what We the Good is and the purpose that it actually serves?
Yeah. So We the Good is a platform where we kind of aggregate or curate some of the charities that are working in Singapore who are, as much as we could ascertain at the time, working as closely as possible to those who really are in need within our community, right? So we tried not to choose charities who have huge amounts of money in the bank, you know, because there are some charities who have tens of millions in the bank that were not meaningfully distributed since the time of SARS, and yet they're still raising funds. Right. So for me, that didn't quite make sense. So we did choose Some of the smaller charities, lesser served, and those who are really working in the three main segments that We the Good is trying to serve, and that's migrant workers, mental health, and individuals and families at risk. And individuals and families at risk is quite a large category as it is. You know, you have your elderly at risk, you have, you know, women who are victims of family violence, you know, people who are victims of sexual predatory at homes, you know, for those people who is being at home is not safe, right? And so actually where it came from, I'm probably going to answer like five of your questions in one shot here.
Go for it.
So where We the Good really came from was I was just sort of feeling so frustrated about not knowing how I could serve, because I'm not a frontline worker. I'm not trained in medical, you know, and we were all in lockdown, so I couldn't go anywhere and volunteer, right? So, and then the two main issues that I started to see arise were that, you know, in the very early days, we had a lot of WhatsApp messages going around about, you know, we need, you know, the migrant workers, our brothers need chargers, or they need T-shirts, or they need, you know, secondhand clothes, or these kids need laptops, or they can't do home-based learning, they can't actually go to school, right? Or there's this and this and this. And a lot of the time, I actually would follow through with those WhatsApp messages, and I would call them. Hi, I got this message. Do you still need this? Or is it, you know, and try and find out, is it still valid? Is it a legitimate need? And some of the time those needs were met and in fact, overly met. So they had an excess of kind of donations, and sometimes they were not valid needs. And the fear for me was that if you gave a charger, you might feel that your giving is done. Mm. You know, yeah. It's like, I went to the
I did my bit, right? But there's so much more that needs to be done. Yeah. And there's so much that's going to continue to need to be done, you know, for an extended period of time, not just right at the beginning, you know, or a month in or whatever. It's like this is something that we need to try to continue to share the messages of our community who have been affected not only in the first part of COVID, but, you know, ongoing and will be affected as a result of the economic sort of fallout from what's happening.
I think it's really interesting that you noted, and I feel guilty for this as well, what you said about the charger. You just give and you think, oh, I did my little bit. Mm-hmm. And that's that. And what I noticed during COVID is that, you know, collectively, we were all rising together, and I suddenly saw this giant surge in just charity. But I think we're just limited by just not knowing how to go further than just that I did my bit and I gave.
Yeah.
So then I guess leading up to that is beyond, you know, people doing just that bit to I did my bit, how would you advise us to go beyond that?
Well, you know, that's actually a really interesting question, because for me, working so many years in the nonprofit sector, but obviously focusing on wildlife or conservation, right, or sustainability, environmental issues, what I see is that all of these NGOs who work on the ground, they have their heads down and are really focusing on the best ways that they can support elephants or orangutans or rhinos or whatever it is, our endangered species around the world. But that's great. They're the zoologists, they're the biologists, you know, they're the environmentalists and things like that, and they're super specialized. But what they don't have a lot of the time are the storytelling abilities.
Right.
And it's very rare that you come across a triple threat. See, I get goosebumps talking about it, but so it's really rare that you come across a triple threat. And a triple threat to me is someone like Jane Goodall. So she's got the science and she's got the experience, but she also knows how to tell stories and engage and fundraise,
right,
and also push for legislation change, right? So those are the kind of individuals that I would love to see more of, right? So if you have a platform, that platform should be used for good, right? So what can you do? And it's the same thing that I've done, and it started way back in 1996. All I did was use the platform that I was blessed with to start talking about the issues that I cared about.
Right.
And these issues that my audience probably would never even start to think of.
Yeah.
Right? Or have the access to, right? So it's just about, okay, if you're my dream world is that we move from a world where people want to be influencers to a world where people want to be impactors.
Right.
And then, you know, say one of you girls, right, you decide, okay, I'm passionate about mental health, or I'm passionate about elephants.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I love elephants, but I'll just throw it out there. Just putting it on you.
Don't worry, I'll take it. I'll run with it.
You know, and then so you sort of dig deeper and find out the best organizations who are working in the field, volunteer your time, you know, start sharing their content and their assets, and then really sort of connect with them and say, hey, you know, I want to help you. And I can tell you that the guys that I'm supporting now for the orangutans are the same guys that I reached out to in 1995.
Yeah, I think that's such an interesting point, because frankly, the thing that attracted me to We the Good when I first heard about it, and to be honest, I don't remember where I came across it, whether it was Instagram or Facebook, it was social media of some description. But what I liked was that it was essentially offering marketing power to causes that don't necessarily have the resources for themselves. So like you said, amplifying a platform you already have for another cause. But I do think that when it comes to social media especially, it's almost a double-edged sword, because there's a point at which a message gets so marketed so well that it's almost diluted. So, I mean, we did have the black square on Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. We also had most recently the high number of femicides in Turkey.
Yep, the black and white
so
photos.
The black and white photo challenge. Yeah. So, yes, we did have a lot of people saying, hang on a minute. Let's educate ourselves of exactly why we're doing this. But sometimes we are at risk of deafening the message even further.
Yeah.
So what can we really do to make sure that, you know, we keep that as crystal clear as possible, to have people feel the need to help rather than just sort of hop on a bandwagon?
Mm. Yeah, that is really important. And I think I think with We the Good and the team at Elementary, who are our partners in bringing this into fruition, we really have taken a lot of time and consideration to sort of not do anything that's too hypey, and really sort of stretch out, you know, and of course we could have maximized very early in the game, brought, you know, influencers on and like got everyone to do this and get everyone to share. But Derek, who you guys will be interviewing also, he was very right in sort of going super slowly with this.
Right.
And that then gives us a lot more ability to establish who we are, what we're doing, and also then to sort of build a lot more credibility in a longer term kind of run, which is, I think, is very sensible. So I think it can't be about the hype. It really needs to be about the work that's getting done. And that takes some kind of, that takes some amounts of courage, and what's the word I'm looking for? Sort of being able to deal with the voices in your head that are like, we need to do this faster. We need to, which is me. You know, I'm like, come on, we need to go. And he's like, just chill. Hang on a minute. We're going to do it this way and this way. And this, which is awesome. It has been awesome. And again, it's like establishing, okay, what are, and I had these calls with the charities just a couple of weeks ago, because $90 million has been raised in Singapore for COVID. So then I reached out to the charities. I'm like, guys, you know, the ones that we have on our platform, like, have you met your fundraising quota? Do you need any more assistance with funds? Or is it about raising awareness about what you're doing? Yeah. Is it about ensuring that people know that they can come to you to get help? Because that's also an issue as well, because being in Asia, we're so used to not talking about our problems,
right,
and not saying we need help, right?
Yeah.
And then if you have a problem, it's taboo. We sweep it under the carpet. We don't talk about it, right? Mental health, it's, domestic violence, you know, sexual predatory, all of those things. It just doesn't happen,
yeah,
right? So is it how do we then engage the public and let them know that these services are there? Mm-hmm. Because in Singapore, the services are there, the funds are there. Right.
Yeah. I think we do have an issue with generally accepting help as a culture. I mean, even on an individual basis,
oh, yeah,
if we're going through stuff, especially, you know, during lockdown, where some of us might be going through a fair amount of mental health struggles, your immediate thing is, you don't share that. You don't want to put yourself in that position, even with your friends and people you care about.
Yeah.
So to bring it onto a bigger scale and expect those who are truly in much greater need in terms of having their basic needs met, to ask them to come forward and accept charity is probably a bigger challenge than I think we anticipate.
Mm. That's why it's really important to normalize these kinds of things. Normalize the discussion around these things. Not normalize that these things, you know, that happen, but like, you're not feeling good today and that's totally okay.
Yeah.
I feel like shit sometimes.
Yeah.
I do. I really do. You know, like, I really do. And there's so many times, and especially because the work that I do is so challenging because I'm interfacing with the world's biggest problems, you know, if it's like not climate change or pollution or plastics or, you know, any of those kinds of planetary system shutdowns, which you know, I deal with the UN, and now it's, you know, issues within the community. And so I can sit on the phone with a charity for an hour and listen to what's really happening, and it's hard, you know, it's really hard to just,
because you are absorbing that.
You do.
It does carry on to you. Yeah.
Yeah. And then times when you're like, this is so overwhelming. How on earth could I even possibly imagine that I could even make a dent in this, right? And
right.
So it can be hard. And that's why having these discussions openly, especially around mental health, and there's another organization that I'm involved with, I'm not sure if you know, called Contentment Foundation, which sits at the intersection of, I'm an advisor for, it sits at the intersection of mental well-being and education. So it's a well-being curriculum that's from all the way from kindy all the way up to graduation that can roll out across schools across the world. And this is an incredible curriculum developed by Dr. Daniel Cordaro, formerly of Yale, he also developed the Atlas of Human Emotions with a professor named Professor Ekman, who is like the foremost professor of human emotions. So that is, I'm deeply passionate about mental health issues and mental well-being. So it is something that we need to encourage the discussions around. We need to help people to know To be in touch with their emotions and their feelings and where they are, you know, be able to sort of gauge where they are, mm-hmm. and know that there's support there for them, for us, for all of us.
So then on a personal level, given that you are a figurehead and an ambassador for all of these causes, how do you keep your head centered? How do you not get overwhelmed? Or when you do get overwhelmed, where do you seek help? Like, where do you, you know, seek your comforts?
I'm lucky because I've had my own mindfulness practice for about 16 years now. I have also facilitated classes on mindfulness. I've facilitated classes on the mind and its potential, and also classes on Buddhism, like a proper curriculum. And so I am so grateful that for those tools, because I know when I'm off balance, and balance is one of the most important things for me. In fact, I have four pillars that I see in my life that hold me up, and that is the Nadia work, which is the work that you see outwardly, you know, my social impact, social environment impact work, which a lot of the time you don't see, and then my spiritual practice and my family. So I know that I need to have all of those four things fully charged to be able to keep good balance in my life. What do I do? You know, I'm doing some form of yoga or mindfulness every day, because without that, I just can't function. And so mornings to me look like I wake up in the morning, I write, and then I do my Dharma practice, and then I do some kind of movement. So it's about just sort of working through body and mind and setting myself up for a good day. And then if a day is a crappy day, like I had just recently on my actual birthday, then it's like, oh my God. And it's hard, you know, because then you're like, I should have this.
Yeah.
You know, then I'm telling myself these stories and I'm doing, applying all these tools to my mind. And I'm like, why am I going through this? I should know this. Why am I so attached to this kind of outcome? And my expectations need to be sorted out and managed. And I'm like, okay, just chill, let it go. Friends help.
Yeah. we're both looking at each other like yes, got
this
it.
Is our existence. This whole like, you knew better. You should know better. And yeah. The conversations of our overthinking minds just have with ourselves. Hearing you say that, just we get it.
Because I think the trap is that in engaging in all these practices, whether it's meditation, whether it's yoga, just general mindfulness, journaling, even is that, okay, well, clearly I have the toolbox, I have the solutions. And then there are some days where it just doesn't work and you can't get over that hump and you're just thinking, if I have all these assets, why is it still not working? And I think you can almost bog yourself down even further because you know, if you have the tools and you still can't figure it out, then where else are you supposed to go? But
that's why a good support team is good. And there's no harm in having great life coaches. There are some incredible coaches out there. Another organization that I'm involved with is all about, you know, coaching people to be really, really well, robust individuals who are not just thriving in their work life, but thriving holistically, you know, within their own personal lives as well. Because unless you can do that, there's no way you can thrive outwardly as well.
Yeah. No, so I kind of wanted to turn the conversation more towards We the Good right now, because I want to know what you guys are doing. What are some of the works that you are helping and are in progress right now?
Yeah. So we have the three pillars, which are mental health, migrant workers, and individuals and families at risk, like I mentioned earlier. And then with each of those pillars, we have the different charities that sit that fit within those pillars. And so what we've been doing is we've been trying to encourage the charities to give us stories. And again, it's not as easy as it seems, right? It's like, what do you need? How do we? So it's like teaching them a new language and really sort of trying to get them to understand what the value is in telling stories. Mm-hmm. And so when we have stories, then what we've been doing in lockdown, actually, and the only thing we could do was create a lot of comic strips and animations, and we're bringing on animators and illustrators to help to tell those stories. Then we moved into being able to do Zoom IG Live or IG Lives or Zoom interviews, right? And focus on, again, just telling stories and raising awareness for the charities. So we have, what's beautiful about We the Good is that it's a platform for different champions to come on board. So we had Nathan Hartono doing mental health. Then we had Anita Kapoor doing individuals and families at risk. And then we had Nurul Aydin doing migrant workers. Mm-hmm. And so the idea really is that we are lending the platform to champions. And we hope to bring on more champions, We the Good Champions, as we move on further. And what the dream for me would be that we have a different opt-in levels, right? So if you came to me and you said, hi, Nadia, I'm really keen to help. What can I do? And I'd say, you've got option A, B, and C. Option A is you can choose which charity you want to support, follow them, share their content, share with the good content, and here are our assets and whatever you need, right? Or I could say option B is you're a content creator. You can go out there and create a podcast or go out there and shoot something, because now we can actually get out there and shoot stuff, right? Or whether it's film or whether it's photography, right? Mm-hmm. And here are the branding, you know, assets of We the Good, and you can just tell the story your way, mm-hmm. right? Or option C, which is what I'm really hoping that we can move towards, whether or not we can actually see it into fruition, I'm not sure, but someone once told me, tell everyone your dream, so I'll put it out there, right? and that is that we would welcome a very, very select group of champions, change-making champions, to come on board to We the Good. And it would be 6 to 8 a year, maybe. And we would bring them on board, and they would make a commitment to We the Good, and they would then get additional a curriculum that we would develop to help you to understand what are the main assets and tools that you would need as a change maker, and how do you actually create impact? And then we would have these mentors that you could align you with, and sessions with some of the world's most incredible change makers, right? So that is the option C. So we really groom a very, very small group of change makers. And behind all of this, the technology of We the Good is that we are able to actually one of our founding partners is a technology company based out of the US, who will be able to track the entire funnel from the first click all the way through to, you know, to see all of your engagement and whether you actually create impact and whether that impact actually means donations or not. A lot of the time, in all honesty, influencers, and I don't like the term, but I will say I call them my champions, or We the Good Champions, doesn't exactly equal fundraising.
Right.
Right. But with the engagement and the noise that we create with our champions and the nonprofits, then we have all of this data, and we can say, corporate A, would you like to come on board? Because we have all of these statistics mm-hmm. and this data to tell you exactly what kind of impact we're creating, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like the bigger picture. It's like, how do we move from influence to impact mm-hmm. and be able to collect the data around that, and ultimately the people who need the help get the help.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that's so critical, because I think a lot of us assume that impact is the equivalent of a financial outcome. And that's why when the majority of us think of how can we help, we think of what can I throw a bit of money at, without really realizing that we need to basically offer this cause a much bigger platform and a much bigger significance, I guess, in people's mental, consciousness. And I think it's interesting that you're basically using marketing analytics to dig deeper into that and find out exactly what impact you're having. Because it was like the point we were saying earlier, a lot of these causes, they hit this peak where they're at their loudest and everyone's paying attention, and then suddenly it just goes quiet. Mm. And then we lose track of, like, did we actually do anything? Did we achieve anything? And I don't think that we hit that level of storytelling, where the storytelling often stops at the point of crisis, and it doesn't actually follow through to the resolution. So having a platform to engage with all the storytelling, and also engaging with influencers or champions to tell that story in the way that they are most comfortable, kind of gives people more tools than, you know, the money that's in their bank account to make a difference.
Yeah. And honestly, there are so many ways that you can give and then you can contribute. Like, so for example, if you're a nonprofit and you're focusing on elephants, for example, right, mental health. So you have the tools and the specializations, and you've got the professors and all of those people who are able to do those things. But you do not have expertise in fundraising, HR, biz dev, marketing, storytelling, any of those, legal, right? Yes. Or grant writing, right? But you raise funds. So I'm an elephant organization A, and I'm doing a fundraiser, and I raise $100,000. My $100,000 ultimately ends up going to my biz dev, my HR, right, my legal, my grant writing, my, you know, all of those marketing, right? Yes. So what happens to the elephants?
Yeah.
Right? So again, another dream, and one of the things we were talking about with We the Good, but something that I've been thinking about for a really long time is that corporates should in-house nonprofits. Mm. Right, so the corporates have all of these skill sets, and instead of ticking off the box and saying, this is my CSR quota, I've right. cleaned the beach or I've picked up some trash, yeah. here it is, this is my 5 hours, 4 or 5 hours a month of legal or HR or da 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 da, and then elephant organization A can focus on the work that they need to do. And it's the same with the NGOs and nonprofits who are working to benefit humans here in Singapore.
So in a lot of ways, charities actually have to learn very quickly that they need to operate as a business. But the problem is they can't get the talent, I guess,
yes.
because those are the people that, frankly, will expect to be paid, whether it's for charity or not. So, no, I completely agree that incorporating CSR into a corporate framework is way more effective. Mm. Because if you're basically saying to, you know, your head of legal, you are committed 5 hours, say, a week to this cause.
To this We the Good charity, right?
Yeah, which is actually a part of your job description rather than, oh, here's a thing that you can feel good about at the end of every month. Mm. That would go so much farther.
Yeah.
Man, companies need to get more on it. They're like, okay, the beach cleanups are great, but like, let's move on.
Yeah, there are so many ways. And so a lot of the times people say, how can I help? And that's why we put out there with We the Good, you know, it is actually We the Good. And there's a segment on our website that says Be the Good. Yeah. So you can log on to our We the Good website and then sign up for Be the Good and tell us, what are your skill sets? You know, what can you do that you can do to support the charities that are on our platform?
So do you think in general, the people who have been most receptive to the platform, like, what do they look like? Are they young? Are they older? Are they more established? Because, I mean, we know that Gen Z seem to be like the most woke, most vocal, most...
Yeah. Yeah,
online engaged people, but whether they're the ones that are following through with the changes versus those who maybe just have a bit more money to offer or more like life experience to offer.
Yeah, I don't know that. We don't have Shane, my social media guy might have some kind of analytics on some stuff, but in terms of in the dollar sign. In the dollar sense, we don't know that because mm-hmm. we partnered with Giving.sg.
Sure.
So if you make a donation, only Giving.sg or the recipients will know who are the donors. Yeah, so that's and there's been so much money raised already. So yeah. we're not sure if that's, you know. Although I must say, our charities still need money.
Yeah.
So, when I say that, I'm like, oh no, hang on. They really do still need money. So. But I'm not sure, I don't know who our audience is, but it would be interesting to find out.
Well, I guess in the topic of just like how charities are adapting through businesses and how Gen Z's mindset is super different, how do we continue to spread the message of being good and sharing good and just doing good to the next generation?
Yeah, I think it really goes back to taking a few steps back. Because if we are not feeling well, it's very hard for us to give, mm-hmm. right? So we need to, and there's two parts to this. One of it is that we need to ensure that we are well enough to be able to give, because you can't give what you don't have,
right?
The other part of that, and this is the part that I love, is that when you do good, you feel so good.
Mm.
You feel so good, you know? It's only a matter of just starting, you know? And it's the same with other things like eating well or, you know, looking after your mind and all of those things. Because when you start a practice and you get into a routine of it, you understand the effort that you put in is really worth it because you get so much out of it, right? And it's the same with giving. And that is giving of your time, your expertise. You know, if you have funds, it's great too. But there's so many ways to give. And it just, if you practice generosity, it comes back to you. Mm. It really does come back to you in so many ways, right? So being able to foster that feeling or foster that next generation of change makers, I think is such an incredible gift, not only to the community, but to those that next generation of champions and change makers. Mm. Because once you get that, it's like, you know, this is awesome. It's hard. It's not easy. Yeah. There are many times where I'm just like, what? Don't you get it? You know, like, come on, right? But, you know, the times that it works, it's just magic. Mm. It's just magic, you know. And then you just realize that you start to open the door and you realize how many people are there that do want to help.
Yeah, and I think, again, going back to the vast majority of us looking at our giving efforts through financial means, especially at a time post-COVID where, you know, we're about to go into, or we already are in, another pretty big recession. Mm. So to get people to think beyond, well, I haven't got the money either. How am I supposed to be able to offer anything? Mm. It does become a challenge. But then, like, what would you say is maybe, what's the most stressful part of your work at the minute? Like, what's your biggest challenge for right now that you need help with?
Right now, manpower to keep up with the amount of work that we need to do. And we're in the process of bringing in interns to help, you know, and volunteers to help with fundraising, with partnerships, and with project management. So we're bringing in people to do that. The next challenge would be helping organizations to see the value of storytelling. Mm. Some get it very quickly, but others are like, how does this help us? You know, how do we, what does this do? You know, because if you can tell stories, when you tell stories, you shift mindsets. When you shift mindsets, you shift behavior, right? And when you shift behavior, you shift either consumer behavior in terms of like consumption, or you shift behavior in terms of not being capable, mm-hmm. right? We
it's very important.
Yeah. Either are capable or they're not capable enough, right? Yeah. And not capable enough means that maybe I'm a neighbor and I can hear that somebody is being abused next door,
right,
but I don't do anything. Mm.
No, that I've actually had personal experience with, in that I heard a lot of shouting and screaming next door. I heard glass smashing and I heard a baby crying. And so naturally I called the police. And then I was actually told, because I was house sitting at the time, and I was told by the person I was house sitting for, who was abroad, because I let them know what the situation was. And she went, "Don't be that kind of neighbor. Like, we don't want that reputation." And I think we are also in a place where, you know, it's like the same with when you see people whip out their phones to record something that's happening on the street. Like, say there's a quarrel on the street. Like, there are times where you think, okay, I think filming it's a bit unnecessary. Like, I think we can actually improve the situation without having to document it for Facebook. But there are other times where it offers transparency to a problem and offers like a clear-cut neutral perspective. But I think we do have an issue with understanding when it is appropriate for us to step in and when maybe things can go without our help.
Yeah. I think what we've touched on a lot today was charity on a big scale with corporations. But I kind of want to tune in for our listeners, to the individuals who are coming in and hearing this in your earwaves. That's you. How would you then advise and inspire our listeners on an individual level to want to find it within them to do some good? Like, how do we get you guys to...
It's not about us. We already get it.
Yeah.
We all need inspiration, okay? I tell you, I look for inspiration on a daily basis. Mm. It's really important, I think, in life to be able to take a few steps back and take a pause. And COVID is a wonderful opportunity to do that if you can, right? If you can. And to really look at what it is that... To really do some inner work to establish what your inner moral compass is, mm-hmm. right? Because when you can establish what your inner moral compass is, what it is that, that What are your benchmarks of success? What does success actually mean to you? Does success actually mean having all these bags and shoes and fast cars and big houses? Does that actually equal happiness? Or does happiness and success actually mean to you that you have a good, robust, strong community of friends mm-hmm. who are there for you at any time, right? Does success actually mean for you that you have the ability to give freely of your time, of your expertise or funds, right? Does success mean to you that you have a place in your life for joy and play and dance, you know, and allowing those things to come in and not be so serious, right?
Yeah.
Does joy mean to you that you can, or success, these benchmarks of success, does it mean that you have a really good mindfulness practice where you can put a pause between stimulus and reaction, right? Or does it mean that you're kind and you can foster kindness amongst your community and your peers, right? And you have that ability to do that. So to me, those are the actual benchmarks of success, right? So it takes time for you to sort of take a few steps back and really to sort of analyze these things in your own life, right? And if you can establish that, then what happens is that all of the decisions you make moving forward will be guided by those principles, right? And that also means finding the motivation to want to help and to want to give,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So it really is taking a lot of time to look inwards.
Yeah, and I think that's the blessing of COVID, in a weird way to say that, because by having to be locked in with our thoughts, a lot of us have been on this journey of the last few months of just having no choice but to go inwards and like reevaluate our values and then where we find our worth.
Yeah.
So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, it takes time and it takes work, but everything else in life does too, right?
You know? Yeah, and I think that's probably my biggest lesson is that everyone, I think, talks about how they take care of themselves in the way that you shared with us earlier in terms of, you know, your physical, like your physical, spiritual, mental practices that are daily. Is I think a lot of people treat those as indulgences when actually they're disciplines.
What I like to say actually is that they're smart selfish.
Right.
Right. So if you're focusing on self-care just for your own well-being, then that's kind of like just being self-indulgent. But if you're focusing on self-care to be able to be the best version of yourself, to be able to serve, then that's smart selfish. And it's not self-indulgent because, like I said earlier, you can't give what you don't have.
Yeah.
It's so easy, and yet we forget all the time, right?
It's like the airline safety video, isn't it? Like you have to put your mask on first before you help your child. And
yeah.
I'm not going to lie. Like when I used to watch that video, especially as a kid, I was like, why would you help yourself first before me?
Yeah.
It's like, I need it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, all of you are fine. I'm vulnerable.
Yeah, but it's true. We have to wear the mask.
Yeah, and I think smart selfish is a very good way to put it, because I think a lot of people who are maybe typically used to putting themselves second or don't understand that taking care of yourself is the foundation you need in order to be able to help each other or help others effectively. Like you can try and you probably feel like you're working just as hard, but it doesn't mean you're going to cause any great change because of it, because you're just not, frankly, efficient. I don't know. It's like growth hacking, but on a personal level.
So just keeping an eye out for the mindfulness of time. I do want to take this moment to kind of round down with a final thought from you of maybe what your intentions and your hopes for We the Good is going to be.
We the Good. Well, I think I mentioned earlier, like the few stages, the opt-ins for our champions to come on board. I hope that we can foster a future of community engagement and building robust communities. You know, I think what has come out of COVID, and I think we saw that a bit in the early mid sort of part of lockdown, was the levels of kindness that kind of just started to arise, right? That we not let go of that, right? And we really remember that there are so many segments of society that we don't see, right? We really don't see. And who, there's always going to be someone who needs a little extra help, right? And so just look out for those people. Think about ways that you might be able to contribute. yeah, and just be the good. I think we have a long road ahead of us because, yes, We the Good was born out of a need to serve the community during a time of crisis from COVID. And as a reminder, we are all locked down because of our relationship to the environment. Mm-hmm. You know, we are behind bars because of the way that we humans have treated animals and the natural environment,
right?
And so that's directly related to the work that I do with the environment, right? Because we're wiping out natural habitats. More and more natural habitats are being wiped out for development. Humans are encroaching further and further into these once were pristine, biodiverse rich areas, right? Mm-hmm. And COVID lives in there,
yeah.
Right? And then because we're destroying these habitats, the animals are being brought out and brought into the wet markets and we're consuming them, right? And that is not our place, right? But karmically, that's just what we have to deal with. If we're going to mess with the planet, of course, we then are the ones who are going to suffer, mm-hmm. right? And so COVID is just one of the many symptoms of environmental destruction,
mm-hmm.
right? So we have to remember that, yes, COVID is here and We the Good started during COVID, but I do see that the need for champions and people talking about issues and having the support that they need to be able to create a proper impact is going to be needed moving forward even more and more mm-hmm. because we have climate change coming up, mm-hmm. right? And that so many planetary systems are collapsing. And already there are great millions of people around the world who are so severely affected by the beginnings of climate change, and we're not even in the real throw of things mm-hmm. just yet.
Yeah, I mean, our $20 donation really didn't do very much. We have so much work to do.
We all have a lot. It's a long, long road.
Yeah.
So it's about arming ourselves with the right tools to be able to manage.
Yeah. Well, with any luck, Gen Z are fairly, I feel like they're a lot more mobilized than any previous generations were, for sure. Because I feel they are the ones who actually have to bear a lot of the brunt and a lot of the consequences of what we, you know, we've done to the planet, with our industry and everything else. We just got to hop on their bandwagon, I reckon, because yeah. I think they're going to be the ones to really drive the change home once they're in the position of power to do so.
Can't wait too long, though.
No, of course. We have to start. Yes. We have to lay those foundations, and then hopefully they'll carry that mission through for us. And maybe correct it, because, you know, like, eventually we'll be the older generation who probably make the mistakes, and then everything that we say is taboo or racist or homophobic.
We'll get there.
We'll be those people. We just got to stay open and remember that they're the ones who have to carry the world forward.
I don't know. I get goosebumps again talking about it. You know, I feel incredible guilt for the way that we've left the world for the next generation, and that's what keeps me going on the days that I want to give up. And I have been optimistic since 1996. 2018, I almost gave up. And then a couple of days ago, I was like, you know what? I'm done. And then I was like, who am I if I'm done? You know, like, what would my kids think if I just gave up? And what kind of world am I leaving them, you know?
Yeah.
And how could I rest at night knowing that I'm not doing everything that I possibly can to make a difference for them?
I feel like my mantra in general when it comes to whether it's charity or just bigger causes is, if not me, then who? And just to never assume that someone else would pick up what I gave up on, which, you know, gets tiring, I agree. But I don't think I'm nearly doing as much work as you're doing.
Everyone is a piece of the puzzle. Yeah. Everyone. And everyone has a role to play.
I'm feeling so inspired by our chat today.
I can feel the energy
in
general.
I'm soaking it in.
Like Hanley's just been a sponge in the corner. Being like, take more.
And thank you so much again for coming on and sharing that with our listeners and us. It's a message that we kind of need to hear coming out, but being in the midst of what a weird year. It's almost like a nice realignment of what our show focus should be on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, you're most welcome. Most welcome. Thank you for having me.
And just before we do go, can you please let us know where people can reach you on social media and what, you know, We the Goods handles are, and Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
Yeah. I'm mostly on Instagram, a little bit on LinkedIn, both as Nadia Hotagalong. And We The Good .sg is the both Instagram and the website. Twitter, I lost my passport a few years ago. I haven't bothered to find it.
Didn't we all?
Yeah. So, it's not really a very valuable platform to me. That's it.
Cool. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.